What you've done essentially is created a guideline for optimizing your health and your body.
Yeah, you know, I've always wanted to be healthy from a really early age, like 12 or 13, and read a lot of books, wanted to do the right thing, tried to figure out the hacks before they were called hacks, and got to the point where I was, you know, I was doing a lot of running because aerobics was supposedly going to make you live longer. I was eating complex carbohydrates and a ton of them in order to fuel the aerobics. I became a pretty good endurance athlete, but I fell apart as a result of the training and the result, it turns out, of the diet. So the diet was very pro-inflammatory, as we say. So I started doing research into the ways in which I could re-access this health that I was seeking from the early age and not fall apart and not be decrepit and beat up. And this became my mantra, is how can I be strong, lean, fit, and healthy with the least amount of pain, suffering, sacrifice, discipline, calorie counting, portion control, and everything else. And where it led me was out down this path of looking at human evolution and how we got to where we are today, how we derived this genetic recipe that we all have that wants us to be strong and fit, combining the research only in the last 10 or 15 years with the modern genome and sequencing the genome and figuring out the actual mechanism of how lifestyle behaviors and foods and sun exposure and sleep turn genes on or off. And they can turn on genes that make us strong and build muscle. They can turn on genes that burn fat more efficiently than, say, glucose. They can turn off genes that cause us to be moody and depressed, turn off genes that might predispose us to get cancer. And what I arrived at was a simple set of guidelines, these 10 primal blueprint laws that not ironically emulate human nature and human behavior for the first 2.5 million years of our existence. So the genome was forged in this crucible of eat plants and animals, avoid poisonous things, move around a lot at a low level of activity, sprint once in a while, lift heavy things. Every human that ever lived up until 10,000 years ago did that every single day, and that's how those genes got passed along to the next generation to become us. Where we've screwed up is in the last, certainly in the last couple of hundred years, but starting 10,000 years ago with agriculture, we went from being hunter-gatherers and moving around a lot to being sedentary and sitting in one place and eating processed foods, not disposing of our waste, lots of little things that sort of conspired to make us smaller and weaker and more susceptible to disease.
So you were involved in triathletes and endurance activities, which kind of break down your body. That's one of the big issues that a lot of people have with that kind of training. It's just constant and brutal, and
yeah, it's catabolic. It's a great pursuit. I wouldn't take back my years as an endurance athlete. I was a marathoner in the 70s, and then I was a triathlete in the early days of triathlon and all throughout the 80s. But the training was—it's devastating. It really does tear you down. And the assumption was at the time that you had to put more miles in than anyone else to be one of the best. You had to, dial everything down. You had to work harder. You had to suffer more. You had to struggle more to achieve greatness or to win races. What we've discovered in the last 5 years is that it doesn't have to be that way.
How crazy is that? That it's only the last 5 years. I mean, that, we're talking 2010, 2011.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of this new paradigm is based on science. It's been brewing for 40 years, but it wasn't. The findings weren't palatable to most of the athletes who were training. They certainly weren't palatable to the coaches who had been invested in training a certain way, putting in a lot of miles, eating lots of carbohydrates, managing glycogen throughout an event. Which meant not only carbohydrate loading the night before a race, but yeah, Seeing how many gel packs you could slam down in an hour to keep the sugar burn throughput going. And that's certainly what my generation of athletes wound up depending on, and we all trained that way. And it was sort of it was counterintuitive to think that you could learn how to burn fats much more efficiently, that you could possibly go faster by going slower under certain circumstances, that you could spend time in the gym doing heavy weights and have that manifest itself in in better endurance. So these later sort of developments that come out of the laboratory and come out of the clinical studies, you know, they were sort of interesting to the people who were reading them, who knew how to read the studies, but it didn't make it into the mainstream training mechanism.
What was the science based on where people had used carbo loading and carb loading and using all those gel packs and eating a lot of pastas and stuff? Where did that come from? Like, what was the idea behind that?
That came from studies that go back into the 30s and 40s, but it was basically this notion that the body needs to burn glucose to go fast, that it was assumed that you couldn't burn fat at a high rate of throughput. And if you couldn't burn fat, then the only thing you could do was manage your glycogen. Those muscles can store 400 or 500 grams of glycogen max, which is only enough to run 20 miles, let's say. If you couldn't, so you had to learn how to manage that glycogen so you didn't deplete it in a marathon, for instance, so you'd hit the wall at 20 miles. So how do you get through the wall? Well, you start to learn how to, I mean, Gatorade came out of this science. The Gatorade was the great first real performance-enhancing substance that athletes used. You could drink this sugary drink that had salt in it in a race and then stave off that wall a couple of more miles. So for years, for decades, the science revolved around continuing to try to figure out how to manage glycogen. So Professor Tim Noakes out of South Africa was the go-to guy in this. He wrote a book called The Lure of Running. It's a 900-page tome. He was the source that everyone cited for decades when it came to carbohydrate intake and glycogen management and all of the things that had to do with fuel partitioning during an endurance event. And about 5 years ago, he looked at the research, partly because he was he'd been a runner himself. He'd been employing the same strategy of carbohydrate intake and carbohydrate management, but he was a type 2 diabetic. He had become, despite his training, a type 2 diabetic. I think his uncle and his father had died as type 2 diabetics. So he got the fear of God put in him, and he started to reevaluate the research, and he literally had an epiphany. He goes, oh my God, I'm the guy that's been promoting this way of training for decades, and now I have to completely change my opinion on it and say what I told you was wrong. And the body is developed and was designed to be a great fat-burning machine and not rely so much on carbohydrate and not rely so much on glycogen or glucose. And the guy is taking so much shit for it in South Africa. They're like trying to run him out of the country. There's a trial going on right now.
Really?
Yeah. Here's Professor Tim Noakes. And in my mind, that's the epitome of a heroic science, a man of science. He's gone down a path. He's dedicated his life to being the guy. And then he looks at the research and he goes, holy shit, I messed up. This is terrible. I've been telling you the wrong thing, and I'm willing to basically follow my sword and tell you that because it's this new revelation is the truth.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be, right? I mean, that's what science is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be relying on this bad information just because you've taught it to people. It's supposed to be you find the new data doesn't correspond with the old data. You have to let everybody know.
I know, but it's like, that's like unicorn farts. I mean, it's a really science is kind of dirty and messy, and there are no black and whites in science. There's no absolutes. There's no right or wrong answer. They're just theories and opinions going forward. And if you're a scientist who's had an investment in your life's work being one way, you're gonna defend that position, yeah, even sometimes in the face of new information.
That really becomes a huge issue when they deny information just because it's bad for their ego or just because it's bad for their career. And they could I'm sure, have just kept his mouth shut and just coasted, and everything would have been fine.
It would have been fine for a while, but the corner had been rounded. I mean, mm-hmm, enough other scientists had started to look at this, and he cited me as one of his influences in helping to turn that corner. But here's a guy, he was reading my blog posts and sort of, having a new perspective cast upon his information, and was willing to look at some of the research that I and Rob Wolf and a number of other bloggers in the new, in the emerging paleosphere we're talking about, that we are we're born to excel at burning fat, and we shouldn't have to depend on sugar. And in fact, the less sugar we burn in a lifetime, probably the better off we are.